ruled Trump broke the law when he deployed the National Guard to L.A. to quell protests against immigration raids. Breyer expressed concern about the deployments are, quote, creating a national police force with the president as its chief, unquote. Meanwhile, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth has authorized up to 600 military lawyers to serve as temporary immigration judges. And in more immigration news, the Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals issued a 2-1 ruling that blocks President Trump from using the 18th century wartime Alien Enemies Act to deport Venezuelans accused of being gang members because, quote, we find no invasion or predatory incursion had occurred. The Fifth Circuit is considered to be one of the most conservative appeals courts in the United States. The case is expected to head to the Supreme Court. For more, we go to Washington, D.C., where we're joined by Aaron Reichland Melnick, senior fellow at the American Immigration Council. Aaron, welcome back to Democracy Now! Let's start with that last overnight court decision. If you can talk about this very conservative court ruling against Trump using the Alien Enemies Act, the AEA, and then just go through these latest decisions in the last 2 days.
Yeah, well, first, starting with the Alien Enemies Act, we saw the Fifth Circuit in a 2-1 decision rule that the Alien Enemies Act is a wartime authority, which is what everyone has been saying so far. The judges' panels rule, it was a 2-1 decision. They joined over a dozen other federal judges to rule that this law adopted in 1798 during the quasi-war with France and that has only ever previously been invoked during declared wars is in fact a wartime authority and not something that can be used to deport Venezuelan alleged gang members without any due process whatsoever. So this is yet another blow for the Trump administration in their efforts to use the Alien Enemies Act. And though we know that this case will eventually make it to the Supreme Court, at the Supreme Court as well, the Trump administration is 0-2 in their efforts to use the law without any due process. Beyond that, of course, we had Judge Breyer's decision in California finding that the president violated the Posse Comitatus Act when the military was used for domestic law enforcement, things like riot control or crowd control in Los Angeles.
And for those who are not aware, what is the Posse Comitatus Act?
The Posse Comitatus Act is a 150-year-old law adopted after the Civil War that says extremely clearly that the U.S. military may not be used for domestic law enforcement unless explicitly authorized to do so by Congress. And here, Congress has never authorized the military to be used for basic law enforcement tasks like crowd control.
Also, if you could comment on the federal judge decision over the weekend stopping the Trump administration from illegally deporting as many as 700 Guatemalan children in the middle of the night back to Guatemala.
Yeah, that's another case that looks very suspiciously similar to the kinds of things the Trump administration did in the Alien Enemies Act case. They adopted a very out there, bizarre legal interpretation that had never been put forward, and then tried to execute mass removals in the middle of the night or very early in the morning before a judge could stop them. In this case, a judge acted at 2 a.m. to put forward an order to block the Trump administration and continued forward that order and her actions throughout the day. So they did, in fact, prevent the planes from taking off. But at its heart, this was a result of the Trump administration's bizarre claim that the Office of Refugee Resettlement has an authority to effectively run its own shadow repatriation system and has the ability to send children home outside of the normal constraints of immigration law, which include things like the right to seek asylum. So those flights have been blocked. This case will now continue forward in the courts. But unlike what happened with the Alien Enemies Act and the deportations to El Salvador, the planes did not manage to take off and deplane their passengers.
Meanwhile, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth has authorized up to 600 military lawyers to serve as temporary immigration judges. The head of the American Immigration Lawyers Association, Ben Johnson, warned the decision will gut due process and undermine the immigration court. He said to the Associated Press, it makes as much sense as having a cardiologist do a hip replacement. Talk about the meaning of Army lawyers becoming immigration judges.
Yeah, Ben Johnson is right here. The reality is that immigration law is extraordinarily complex. And it's often been described as second in complexity only to the tax system. And immigration court has often been described as death penalty cases in traffic court procedures. So what we have here are 600 lawyers who may very well be good lawyers and conscientious, but have absolutely no experience in immigration law whatsoever. And they're being assigned to take cases that could lead to someone's death if they're decided wrong. While undoubtedly they could eventually become experts in immigration law with months and months of training, these deployments are supposed to last only 179 days. So you have people who have been or are going to be ordered to take on these incredibly weighty, difficult, complex cases without any of the relevant experience they need, which is only going to strain the immigration court system. And indeed, the purpose of this is clear. Corey Lewandowski, who is a senior advisor to Secretary Noem and, of course, a longtime member of Trump world, said on X yesterday that the goal of this is to increase deportations. And I think that really gives away the game.
So much for being with us. Go ahead, Juan.
No, I just wanted to ask him about the pending invasion of Chicago by both federal agents and the military, especially this idea that Trump has of bringing National Guard troops from essentially Republican states to occupy largely minority cities in Democratic states.
Yeah, I think, as Governor Pritzker has stated, this is particularly disturbing. You know, when you look at the statistics, you know, Chicago is not even in the top 20 most violent cities, which is not to say, of course, that there are not issues with gun violence, but not ones that would justify deploying the National Guard. But I want to emphasize that, you know, beyond the National Guard, this is in many ways also about immigration. Here in Washington, D.C., the National Guard has mostly been standing around the mall or doing tasks like spreading mulch and picking up trash. But what's actually been happening most significantly is the invasion of the city by federal law enforcement officers to carry out immigration enforcement. You have ICE and the Metropolitan Police Department setting up checkpoints in major thoroughfares in the city. You have a major increase in ICE raids across the city and people being afraid to take their children to school. So while a lot of the attention in Chicago is going to be on the National Guard deployment, keep an eye out for what ICE is doing, because this could be yet another Los Angeles where we see huge increase in immigration enforcement throughout the city and immigrant communities forced to shrink back in fear.
Aaron Reichlin Melnick, senior fellow at the American Immigration Council. Thanks so much. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. As President Trump threatens to send the National Guard to Chicago and a federal judge rules against their deployment to quell ICE protests in Los Angeles, we turn now to Jean Guerrero, contributing opinion writer at The New York Times. Her new essay is headlined, "The Border is Invading America." She writes, quote, "The U.S.-Mexico border is no longer just a line on a map. It's a roaming force drifting through our cities and ravaging schools, courthouses, and workplaces. It's become unmoored from geography, dragging its violence and impunity into the heart of American life." Jean Guerrero is author of Hate Monger, Stephen Miller, Donald Trump, and the White Nationalist Agenda, and a visiting professor at the University of Southern California Annenberg School of Communication and Journalism, joining us from Los Angeles. Jean, welcome back to Democracy Now! Why don't you elaborate again on your piece, "The Border is Invading America"?
Yeah, of course. Thank you, Amy. So what we're seeing across the U.S. is that the Border Patrol is now operating deep inside the country alongside ICE, and it's bringing its Wild West mentality. You know, they're wearing cowboy hats, And they're treating Los Angeles and places across the United States like lawless outposts on a hostile frontier. They've been deputized to carry the border with them and to enforce its racialized logic wherever they go. As we know, the administration has asked the Supreme Court to allow it to continue to use racial profiling in immigration enforcement. And in Southern California, we are routinely seeing people targeted based on their skin color, which is why I wrote that the border is no longer something that only divides countries. It also snakes between white and brown, between families and neighbors, between citizens and the rights that they once thought were inviolate. And the brute force that the border once unleashed out of sight in the desert or behind the locked doors of detention centers is now erupting on our streets. For example, in Southern California, we're seeing fathers killed while fleeing immigration raids. We recently saw a family shot at in their car while trying to get away from agents. We are seeing people violently tackled and disappeared into unmarked vans. And too many Americans continue to believe that the border is meant to stop a quote-unquote invasion. But the reality is that the border is invading us. And it's coming not only for the rights of immigrants and for immigrants themselves, but for the rights of all of us.
And Jean, in your piece, you basically also charged that Democratic leaders have been complicit now for decades in the stoking of anti-immigrant xenophobia in the U.S. You write at one point, quote, "I have repeatedly asked Trump voters about his immigration policy, such as his first term's family separation. They tend to reply by shrugging their shoulders and pointing at similar actions by Democratic leaders, saying Obama put kids in cages or Obama separated families, too." You talk about that?
Yeah, I think it's important to talk about that because what happened is that the Democratic Party normalized anti-immigrant cruelty alongside Republican administrations. And until we reckon with that bipartisan nature of our racialized immigration system, then we're not going to be able to restrain it because we need to hold our elected officials accountable in both parties for what they have created together. So as I wrote in my piece, it was the Clinton administration that oversaw the initial militarization of the border in the 1990s, after which we have seen as many as 80,000 people who have died trying to cross the border. That's a stadium of human beings who've died of dehydration in the desert, who've died of broken backs falling off of the border barriers, or even from Border Patrol agents' bullets. And after Clinton's border militarization, we saw President Obama deport 3 million people, more than any previous president. Oftentimes, these are individuals who were deported to their deaths. And the Obama administration also oversaw or decided against removing exceptions for racial profiling and immigration enforcement. This is a decision that the Biden administration made as well. And so both of these administrations affirmed a two-tiered system of justice, one in which immigrants and people who merely look like immigrants have fewer rights. However, when Trump came along, many Democrats treated his cruel policies as if they were shocking new horrors unique to Republicans. And this is a moral inconsistency and hypocrisy that Trump's senior advisor Stephen Miller knew to exploit, which I can talk about in a moment. But the point is that Democratic leaders' selective outrage on the immigration issue helped fuel the crisis that we're living today. And we need to reckon with that because right now, too many Democratic Party leaders wrongly believe that we are where we are today because they were too nice to immigrants.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you particularly again about the role of Stephen Miller. There's been really no one quite like him at the high echelons of federal government in terms of the emphasis on naked mass deportations. Can you talk about him as well as the architect of the Trump policies?
Yes. Yeah, the architect of Trump's immigration policies. So as I wrote in my book, Hate Monger, Stephen Miller is a student of liberal hypocrisy. He grew up in Santa Monica, California, where he saw the performative nature of many Democratic leaders' compassion for immigrants. Santa Monica is a place where many working-class immigrant residents have been pushed into overcrowded apartments or out of the city altogether because of rising rents. So as Trump's speechwriter, it was not hard for Stephen Miller to make the case that Democratic Party leaders defend immigrants only as a source of cheap labor or because they want their votes, even though immigrants don't vote, unless they're citizens. But essentially, Miller knew that in practice, if not in proclamation, Democratic Party leaders had normalized indifference and cruelty toward immigrants. And this longstanding indifference toward immigrants that the Democratic Party has, except when they're wielding this issue as a cudgel against Trump, is something that has worked symbiotically with the racism of Republican leaders to enable the border's violent encroachment on our lives, which we are now seeing. And unfortunately, Democratic leaders are now largely silent on immigration. They are convinced that to win back voters and to win back Americans' trust, they have to either sidestep the immigration issue or they have to channel the right's hostility toward immigrants. For example, we were seeing California Governor Newsom approve cutting back on health care benefits for the undocumented. He's really had a more muted tone on sanctuary laws in California. I actually reached out to his office for comment on the deaths of immigrants that we saw this summer and haven't heard back. But as Democrats like him appear to see it, the party's failure is not inhumanity or incoherence on the immigration issue, but rather an overabundance of compassion for the foreign-born. And this delusion would be comical if it wasn't so costly. It's a gift for restrictionists like Stephen Miller, who use the disconnectedness of Democratic Party elites to stoke resentment toward all liberals and to bolster the false perception that immigrants are to blame for everything. So really what I'm arguing for in the piece is that we desperately need a reckoning with the structural abuses embedded in our immigration system and with how both parties have played a role in sustaining them, because otherwise the border is going to continue to coil inward and to destroy our collective rights.
Jean Guerrero, I want to thank you so much for being with us. New York Times contributing opinion writer. Will link to your piece, The Border is Invading America. Jean is also author of Hate Monger, Stephen Miller, Donald Trump and the White Nationalist Agenda, and visiting professor at USC Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism. Coming up, we look at the case of a military veteran charged with conspiracy for joining an ICE protest. Back in 20 seconds.
Wade in the water. Wade in the water, children. Wade in the water.
A rendition of Wade in the Water by Rutha Mae Harris, one of the SNCC Freedom Singers performing for the memorial service of Mary Travers in 2009 at the Riverside Church here in New York. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We turn now to the story of a military veteran who joined an ICE protest and is now being charged with conspiracy to impede or injure officers. Legal experts have called the charges a test case case for how far the Trump administration will go to punish dissent. Bajan Mavawala, who goes by Beji, is a 35-year-old former Army sergeant who survived a roadside bomb blast in Afghanistan. On June 11th, he saw a social media post by the former city council president of Spokane calling to protest the detention of a legal asylum seeker. The post said in part, quote, 3 weeks ago, I became the legal guardian of a young man from Venezuela seeking asylum. He's turned in all paperwork, has a future court hearing. I went with him to ICE check-in today. They detained him, are shipping him to Tacoma. I'm going to sit in front of the bus. Feel free to join me. The city council president wrote. Beji was one of hundreds who responded. The protest became confrontational. More than 24 people were arrested at the scene. But Beji wasn't one of them. In a minute, a one-minute video posted on Instagram, the Army veteran is briefly visible jostling with an agent before locking arms with other protesters. He was also injured by a rubber bullet at the protest. More than a month later, FBI agents came to his home at 6 a.m. More than a month later, and arrested him. Beji's father, the retired intelligence officer, Bajan Ray Mavawala, filmed part of his son's arrest. His is the first voice you hear in this clip.
I want the search warrant before you go in the house. That's my house, not his. Hold it.
Okay, just put him in the truck. I'm just saying, if you can just step back, we're going to come around here. Thank you.
I'm an Afghanistan veteran. I'm an American citizen.
The conspiracy count against Beji Mavawala carries a maximum penalty of 6 years in prison, $250,000 fine, and 3 years of supervised release. He's now out on his own recognizance awaiting trial. We're joined now by two guests. In San Francisco, Aaron Glantz is investigative reporter who's covered this story for The Guardian. In Spokane, Washington, Bajan Ray Mavawala, the father of Beji, is with us. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Bajan Ray Mavawala, your former Army intelligence with three bronze stars earned, that you have earned during tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. You're the father of Beji, a U.S. Army veteran arrested by the FBI and charged with conspiracy. Explain how this all has come down and your response. You're both retired National Guard.
I'm retired from the National Guard. My son did his full tour. And when he completed his tour in Afghanistan, he decided to get out of the service. So he did not retire. This whole event has been staged by the Trump administration. And my son was responding to a Reddit post and just wanted to go down and protest to do what he could to raise up the voices there and show that they were opposed to ICE's actions, which literally were called for because the two gentlemen that were being detained were abiding by their mandatory court dates. They tell these guys, hey, you've got to come here for court so you can get your status to remain on in the United States. And then they arrested them for coming to court. It's unconscionable.
And Aaron Glantz, I wanted to ask you, you've talked to many legal experts for your article on this case, the significance of being charged with conspiracy for, in effect, just participating in a protest.
Yeah, it's important to note here, not charged with obstruction, not charged with assault, charged instead with conspiracy to impede or injure a federal officer, which carries, as Amy said, a maximum penalty of 6 years in prison and a $250,000 fine and 3 months of supervised release. And the legal experts I talked to said that the burden of proof here for the prosecution is on proving agreement between the demonstrators to show that they collectively wanted to impede these officers. And as you heard Amy say, there's video of Beji locking arms with other protesters, which, you know, might show agreement. So it's a very easy case, actually, for the federal government to make, which is why the legal experts I spoke to said that these cases are brought sparingly by prosecutors, and they exercise a lot of discretion, usually. And in this case, the acting U.S. attorney in Spokane, Washington, resigned 2 days before this indictment was handed down. It was noted earlier in the segment, more than a month passed between the protest and the arrest. In between that time, the U.S. attorney in Spokane, the acting U.S. attorney, turned in his resignation, and the new U.S. attorney in Spokane, Pete Serrano, has filed amicus briefs in his old job, saying that the 14th Amendment does not guarantee birthright citizenship. So we have a real legal dynamics playing out here with huge implications for the whole country.
And Bashan, I wanted to ask you if you could talk about your family service to this country and why your son decided to join the military.
In 1987, my first wife and I joined the Army together. We went to the language school in Monterey, and we both learned Russian. We were both electronic warfare specialists in the intelligence field. And I continued on in the National Guard. I was a recruiter for 7 years, then went on to a full military career as an officer after 17 years enlisted. We were a military family. We lived on the Presidio in San Francisco, which has, of course, a 200-year history of a military installation. But our son wanted to go learn Japanese, and he wanted to have a military career himself. So at 17, he joined the National Guard, just like his mother, just like his father had joined the service. And he went, learned Japanese at the language school, went on for his intelligence training, and he did almost 2 years at Cybercom, titled Top Secret Security Clearance, with all kinds of caveats there. And then he volunteered to go to Afghanistan, where at 23 years old, he was leading a team in combat in Kandahar. So, I mean, there's a long history of military service in our immediate family.
Ala, as a retired U.S. Army intelligence officer, what concerns you most about the Trump administration?
I'm afraid that's a long list. My immediate concern is, as related to your earlier story, both my son and I were in the National Guard. The first thing they start teaching you about in the National Guard is posse comitatus, and that it is illegal to use military force against U.S. persons on U.S. soil. This is reinforced by the Dick Act of 1903, and the abuse of the military.
We have 30 seconds.
On domestic issues is what I fear most, because that is indeed to quash our own freedoms and our First Amendment rights.
I want to thank you both for being with us. Bashan Ray Mavawala, retired U.S. Army intelligence officer, the father of Beji Mavawala, charged with conspiracy for protesting ICE. Aaron Glantz, we're going to link to your piece in The Guardian, the piece that you wrote, and as well as your books, The War Comes Home, Washington's Battle Against America's Veterans. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Nicole Salazar, Sarah Nasser, Chirina Nadura. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
CJ.